Hello and welcome back to Art Cafe. This is episode 132. Please welcome Gio Nakbel. Gio is a senior design evangelist and art director at Adobe. We spoke about his road to becoming an artist and fulfilling childhood dreams, dealing with anxiety of switching industries, and more. Hope you enjoy this show. Let's go.
Out of you, but but that's just like, it's also just getting better at conversations, I think, you know. So
yeah, I mean, I think if there's no pressure or anything, like, people tend to kind of be a bit more looser versus like, oh, we got to talk about the industry, and if it's like, where do I start, you know? I've been around for 20 years, I don't know where to start, like middle and beginning, you know.
It's you've been at ILM starts. I mean, did you, when you worked at ILM, did you do freelance mostly, or did you do office work with them as well?
I was a full-time employee there for 12 years.
Oh, damn. Okay. All right.
Yeah. And then I left to go to Valve and then Oculus. And then there were some jobs where they wanted my services. So, right. You know, they needed help on certain shows. So they set me up with, you know, some freelance gig, which was awesome because I was in the video game industry at that point, and I was still able to do more of the pre-production side of things for them. Because, you know, when I was there, I was like strictly production, which is like, oh man, I got to worry about topology and making sure that this works in the pipeline. There is a certain beauty about like pre-production where I'm just like in ZBrush or wherever.
Yeah, going, just riffing.
I'm going to let the modeler take care of that in production. Yeah. I'm just going to like be artsy fartsy, you know?
Yeah. So you worked with James Klein, right? Did you ever get to talk with him?
I never got to talk to him. I think the project that we were on was War of the Worlds, and he was at Iceblink, to my understanding.
Okay.
But I never really got to talk to most of the you know, art directors like James
Got
Klein,
it.
Like the internal art directors at ILM, like Aaron McBride, Carlos Fuente when he was there, Chris Alsman, those dudes, like we all sat like in the same space. But
gotcha.
I mean, James Klein, man, War of the Worlds, when him, I think Mark Gabbana, I don't think George Ho was in that one, but you know, obviously Doug Chang, they were like doing a lot of the tripod art pieces.
Dream team.
I was just like, yeah, man, when I mean, they were all amazing, like Ryan Church, but with James Klein's, I was specifically like, holy crap, that's the tripod right there, you know, that piece that he did. Yeah, that was a trip. But yeah, I never got to meet him at all.
Yeah, I had him on the podcast. It was kind of funny because I've recently checked, I check social media so rarely these days. Mm-hmm. The only one I'm really using is Instagram. Like, I deleted my Twitter. I basically deleted most of the Facebook. You know, my Facebook page is still connected to Instagram, so I guess that's how it's still there.
Keep it like and barely alive.
Yeah, yeah, barely alive. There's a bunch of people that I still talk to on chat. That's the only reason I'm keeping like the personal profile. But I might just delete it as well. Like I just find no use for it whatsoever. You know, when you unfollow everyone, you just don't see anything. So it's like, why am I here?
And it's just taking up empty space in the world.
But I saw update from James. It was kind of funny because I saw him doing he did a photo somewhere in San Francisco area with his bike, with his mountain bike. He actually got an e-bike. I was like, I didn't know you're biking, you know, because I got into biking recently as well. So that was kind of funny.
That's how you keep up with
you kind of learn. Yeah.
And you're based in LA, right?
I moved out south, more south of LA. I'm not in LA anymore, thank God. Yeah, it's I don't like how things are going there.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah, and I'm planning not to go there anymore.
Okay.
I mean, it's okay. I'm making it sound like it's terrible. It probably is. I mean, compared to what it was, it is freaking terrible. Yeah. I just don't see a reason to go back to the city, you know, anymore. I enjoy where I am. Like, I have a lot of like parks and trails, and you know, I've been into mountain biking for past 3 months, so it's perfect because like it's, everything is so close. I got a truck, you know. It's like,
oh man, you're
full American life, you know.
Just driving down Route 66 or whatever in your
Yeah, it's been great. I cannot complain at all. How's 2020 for you, man? It's been a crazy year.
I mean, like, whatever I say will be the same as what everyone says, you know. It's like crazy.
Maybe you have like a different angle on it, huh?
I think I've found my peace with it in terms of, you know, I think I'm fairly introverted. Like, I mean, I have tendencies of like, and I need to kind of socialize 6 feet away, obviously, or be outside. But for the most part, I'm very solitary, and I like, you know, I have no problem just like being indoors for like 2 to 3 days straight, just kind of like thinking and doing some art. And I think that is the one, if there's a value in terms of a lot of this messed up stuff going on, is it allowed me the opportunity and the rare time to think, which I found to be such a valuable thing. Cause you know, when we're, you know, before a lot of this happened, you know, we were like, a lot of us were in the grind of things, just work, you know, and really there's no time to think. And when I say think, it's just think about random things. And I find that that's things that matter too, right? To be able to afford having that time, I feel at least was a silver lining. You know, I think it helped me kind of put a lot of things in perspective with my own life and also with my art and all that stuff. And I don't think that would have ever really happened as clearly as it has if it weren't for this quarantine. So I mean, looking at it that way.
Was there anything that you got like an epiphany where it's like, okay, like I've through this thinking process, I kind of understood A, B, and C, and then, you know, it follows with D and F, you know?
Yeah. I think as we get older, you kind of tend to think about like, you know, the past and kind of what defines you now from your past experiences in life.
Right.
You know? I mean, that's the thing about thinking is like the thoughts kind of branch out into like multiple roads. And that was like a big freeway my thoughts kind of drove into for whatever reason. And so like, you know, kind of like who I am now, like obviously my experiences as a child growing up in the Philippines, there's a lot of history there, like whatever traumatic childhood. When I say trauma, like, you know, there are traumatic moments of like being in a fight or like an accident, or, you know, like being, you know, Filipinos tend to like spank their kids when they're naughty, like, you know, like sort of innocuous things like that may be innocent to the culture, really tends to kind of define how we are as grownups. Because like if you're experiencing a lot of that really traumatic experiences as a child of, I don't know, like 5 or 6, where your brain is really susceptible to digesting things and all that stuff, then, you know, a lot of that echoes through adulthood. And, you know, I think I was able to kind of reflect on that and kind of figure out how I deal with relationships nowadays because of those things, right? So yeah, I mean, it's just kind of stuff like that. And then there's a lot of other stuff about art, like what I want to do, setting goals, which I never really kind of had the time to do, like at least be specific about, you know?
So. Right. Yeah, we kind of go through the motions for the most part. I felt like last 10 years were like that, kind of going through the motions and maybe, you know, trying to enjoy something fun and throwing new things here and there and trying to achieve goals, but never like introspectively looking into yourself and like, what am I doing it for? You know, like what is the actual goal for it all? It's like, you know, when you go, I'm pretty sure you had that when you joined the industry and your first job, you know, it was like, oh yeah, I've reached that goal that I've ever dreamed of. Like, I wanted to work in this industry. And I'm pretty sure you had goals like, I want to be on this, you know, working in films or something, you know? Yeah. And eventually you reach that and then you get another goal and another goal. And it's like, but it feels like you're just sort of like setting up goals just to achieve them rather than have like a, you know, you know what I mean?
It's almost like instead of goals, at first I thought they were goals, right? Like they tend to become checklists, which are different in my opinion, right? Because I think we're all almost the same, you know, like, oh, we're in this industry because, I don't know, Star Wars or something we saw as a child that influenced us. Ghost in the Shell, Blade Runner, you know, you named the list. That's all me and most likely you. And then we land the jobs that that are close to those properties, maybe like working with the same director as like Star Wars or Spielberg. And then you're like in this high of, oh my God, I can't believe I achieved my goals and all that stuff. But after a while, you kind of just become numb at it, but then you kind of fool yourself into thinking that this is really, I'm willing to sacrifice pay. I'm willing to sacrifice a lot of things, a lot of hours that I spend like late nights with ruining my health because, you know, that I'm so lucky to be working on a Spielberg film or whatever. Mm-hmm. And really when you look back at that, like it's not really sustainable. At least for me, I found that I was like, okay, well, I achieved my goal, childhood dream of working at ILM. That was important. Like I would call that like a dream achieved. Right. Once that was done, I fooled myself into thinking like, oh, but then The Matrix or then this and then this. And like, when really I could have probably, you know, have pulled out and kind of set other real goals that are kind of like better for me as an artist and as a person rather than like setting the checklist within that sort of dream that I achieved, like circling or swimming in that same pool, you know?
Yeah.
Luckily I was able to pull myself out of that by leaving the film industry, working for other industries. I now was able to kind of refreshingly look at the horizon and go, oh, I have new goals now. That's clear to me that I want to kind of do. So,
Yeah. It's kind of difficult because like, unless you really do have time to sit down and sort of like meander about the ideas of what are you going to do in your life and what excites you now and, you know, what is it for? Because I'm pretty sure you had that experience where, you kind of said it already too. You worked on one film or the second film, the third film, and it just becomes sort of like a job, you know? Yeah. Eventually, it's like the same thing over and over. It's a different property. It's a different director, a different production designer, art director, producer, whatever, right? But then eventually, just like you realize they kind of all work the same, more or less, you know, for the better or worse. There are some directors who are amazing to work with. There are some directors that are horrible to work with.
Yeah.
And there are some projects where you're going to pour your heart out and then it just turns to be shit. And then there are some projects where you're going to pour your heart out and it turns to be amazing.
Yeah.
So it's like, it all becomes like very similar in a way until you step out and do something else, like completely different. Yeah. Or it feels like, ooh, I was missing on this thing too, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
100%. Like that is definitely and it's a luxury to kind of be able to think about all that stuff and go and decide to pull out. That's like a scary thing because like when you're in that world, like when I was at ILM, I was like, oh, the thought of leaving the film industry was like, holy shit, it's so scary. You know? Like, what am I going to do? I don't know how to do anything else outside of this.
But the reality is like, it's not that much different though, right? I mean, you've been out of the film and you're doing, you know, similar. I mean, it's not like it's completely out of your expertise where you have to learn from scratch. Let's put it this way. Mm-hmm. You still have to learn new things, but
Oh yeah, totally. It's all applied like with games, right? I mean, it's a different set of things you need to learn, but the basis of it, which is like film industry, game industry, whatever, art industry, you have to have a good foundation of art, right? As long as you're kind of keeping that sustained in your own time, like in my own time, I do my own personal work. You know, it feeds a lot of industries that I may decide to go into. You know, after film, I went to video games. Like, the, you know, they didn't care if I didn't know how to do like real time Unreal or, you know, Source when I was at Valve. You know, what they were looking at was my ability to do art. Right.
So, right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Was there any moment where like you were about to make a decision and you were scared shitless? Like, fuck, what am I doing? Oh,
yeah. Many times, man. I mean, like, first time was, the biggest one. I mean, there's many points in my life, like ever since I was like, you know, after college, you know, but the biggest one obviously was like leaving ILM, because that, to me, that was my life for 12 years. And that was, again, the dream, you know?
Right.
So deciding to, you know, first of all, looking at the horizon and going, well, the film industry is sort of like, for me, at least how I'm experiencing it from my vantage point, I didn't like what it was doing to me in terms of like late nights and all that stuff. And it's going to continue to do so, because I know myself, I will like work myself to death if you give me another Hulk or give me whatever hero creature. Like, it's just, I'm just going to keep working. And so I knew that if I stayed in the film industry, I would just, you know, I couldn't control myself. I'd probably work myself to death. Right. So I was thinking about leaving. And so I saw that the game industry is this place where I could grow, you know, because I was also feeling like I wasn't growing anymore as much in the film industry, having been there for 12 years. Mm-hmm. So when I decided to leave, I was like, I couldn't sleep, man. Like, I couldn't sleep for a good like several weeks just thinking about it. Like, you know, because it's just like, what if, you know, you're going through the what ifs, like, what if I fail? What if this? What if I don't get along with the new crop of people? You know, what if there's politics that I'm like, there's all these elements. But then I decided, like, okay, well, if you're really scared, then that's a good sign, because I think that's, I took that as like an opportunity to go, okay, this is probably the best path, because I'm scared shitless. And usually when I follow my gut towards fear, I always end up being rewarded, you know, from past experience before ILM. And so I kind of just took that template with me moving forward. So when I left to go to Valve, I was scared, but then, oh, well, you know, it's working out. I'm learning a lot. And then when I decided to leave Valve to go to Oculus, because Valve was like this Shangri-La, right? Like, I was there for 2 years. Like, when you're at Valve, you don't ever leave Valve, because that's like, to get into Valve was like hard as hell. Like, you know, the interview process and all that stuff. So again, like a lot of sleepless nights, I was scared, but then deep in my gut, I felt that sense of fear again. So I'm like, okay, I got to answer this and try out this VR thing. And that worked out. So I'm like, okay, well, I'm just going to keep following the path of fear.
Right.
If that even sounds, you know, like a good feedback or you know, advice.
Yeah. I think once you have fire under your ass and you know, you have to perform no matter what, that's when it just like, all right, I guess I have no choice, you know?
Yeah.
What else am I going to do?
Yeah. It's like a fight or flight thing.
Yeah. You know? Almost. So. Almost. How did you get into the industry, by the way? Like, what, I mean, you grew up in the Philippines, right? Mm-hmm. When did you move? Like, I'm just curious, out of curiosity, like, what actually made you move to the United States and
all that stuff? My parents, actually. My sister and I were pretty young, so we didn't really have any decision in the matter. But, you know, because the Philippines was pretty hard in terms of like, you know, our life there, we weren't exactly rich. So Canada at that point was welcoming immigrants, to kind of, you know, put up their economy, mm-hmm. to pump their economy. And so my parents went, and from there, I think I was around 11 when I came to Canada. And, you know, I keep telling this story to students, like I wasn't really good at anything else, like in school, like, you know, I just, not even art, like I wasn't even really interested enough. Like, my mind was always kind of like too scattered to even focus on school or anything. So I was always like, oh man, I'm just not really going to amount to anything. So my parents were like really worried for me. And so they were like, why don't you get a job at McDonald's? You know? So they were like, at least he's got a job. If he's there for 20 years, at least, you know, it's a paying job. Yeah. That's like, you know, I can flip burgers.
Exactly like my parents.
Yeah. Cause parents are like, what's the thing that makes most sense? You know, like, McDonald's for Gio. So I was there for, I forgot how long, but all the while, you know, like, I mean, of course I grew up watching a lot of ILM things, like wishing that I would work there, but really had no path to get to ILM. It was just mainly just like this vague dream that I had, like, right. I would fantasize about, but never really kind of felt like I had a reason to even go there. But then Jurassic Park and The Abyss came out, and I was like, holy shit. And that really was a turning point for me, because it put the, you know, talking about fear, it put the fear in my gut, because now before I kind of didn't really know what to do. But then now that I had a goal, you know, like all of a sudden this fantasy of ILM is now like, this dream is like now a goal. So I was like, I was scared shitless, because like, oh man, now I feel like I have to achieve this goal, but I'm scared because I don't really have the tools to go about and achieving that. And because we weren't rich. So like the schools back then were like, you know, Sheridan College was like, it cost an arm and a leg to even study there. And it's like the Silicon Graphics computers, you know?
Yeah.
So I just tried to find like a cheap school that I can kind of take, like Seneca College. And it was like running like 3D Studio 4 and all that stuff. And it was the most like backwards course I ever took, because the professor wasn't really like teaching us. He was a salesman who would ask his associate like the day before, like what to teach us, reading from the textbook of 3D Studio 4. And then he would just photocopy that and give it to us. So I'm like, what am I paying you for here? So that's where I kind of gained the muscle of working on my own stuff. Because I'm like, well, these guys aren't going to help me to get to my goal. So I'm not going to get there by doing the homework of like, oh, make a torus and boxes and render it in the scene. Like, no, I want to do characters. I want to do that dinosaur. Like, I want to learn how to do that dinosaur in Jurassic Park. Like, how am I going to get there? So, you know, I pretty much in my own time in the lab, like, didn't even do any of the homework. I set myself goals of like working on like my own creatures, and as hard as it was, you know, back then. And it was through that hardship that I was kind of like, okay, like I just need to kind of push through. And I realized that I actually had the moxie to kind of like work hard, because at first prior to that, I thought I was just kind of lazy. So I kind of discovered myself through that process of realization that now I want to be at ILM, right? And so I got a lot of different gigs, like in Toronto, like production assistant. So I would like dub tapes for fancy directors who do commercials, you know, like I would buy them donuts early in the morning, like at 5 a.m. so that they can, when they're editing their films or commercials, food is there. So I was kind of like the lackey. So I was doing a lot of jobs like that, like a graphics design artist for websites. And then like I was able to get some gigs, you know, Jimmy Neutron in Texas, Bethesda. I was able to get a gig there, doing like a lot of the cinematics. But all the while I was working on my own personal website, like I had a presence already, which back then was GeoCities, you know, like sort of the first incarnation of Facebook, if you remember that.
I don't.
Okay, you're probably too young. It was like the sort of like early days of like Squarespace or something, right?
Got it. Yeah, I remember Blogspot.
Oh yeah. Google. That was sort of like the two generations after GeoCities.
Okay. Yeah. And prior to that, it was forums. Like my understanding of what the internet is started like maybe 2000s. Like early 2000s.
Oh, okay. This was like in the mid 90s. So it shows you how old I am.
That's when when you wanted to load a website and there was an image. If someone put a large image, it would load for half a day. Those old printers that just go line by line to printing.
Yeah, do that through the modem when you dial in. That was my world. I was in Texas, I think, when I got the call, not the call, the email from someone at ILM asking if I'd be interested to apply for a position there. And I'm like, holy crap, ILM. This guy's got a Hotmail account. It's probably fake. But of course I was like, no, yeah, sure, I'm interested, of course. But deep down I'm like, this guy legit? And then he replied back with an ILM.com account. And I'm like, at that point, I was like, oh my goodness, this is it. This is the do or die situation, and then from there, I was able to get the job. They like me and all that stuff. So
it's kind of crazy, right? Cause when you think about the first time you were thinking about, this is my goal, I want to join ILM. It felt as such a distant, impossible thing to happen in the circumstances you were in, right? Yeah. If you just, all things considered, I don't even know where to start.
Yeah.
Let alone apply to a fucking ILM,
It's like being, I know nothing about surgery and you give me a scalpel and you go, okay, operate on this guy. What the fuck where do I begin?
Exactly. It reminds me because it's like, once, when you said, I always considered myself as a lazy person. I always thought I was a lazy person because I couldn't amount myself to anything through work. Mm-hmm. And then you found something that I'm just going to pour everything I can into it because I know this is going to get me somewhere.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think passion does that to people, you realize how much more you can do if you're really want to do something. Versus how much you're going to do if you're just not excited about it at all,
And I think some people are just programmed that way. We're sleeper agents. You say a code word and we're like, oh shit, we're awake. Passion.
Yeah. You get like a little switch and then you become a robot. It's like, oh, fucking sleep. Oh, who cares?
Yeah, I know. Hardworking coffee drinking robot to keep yourself awake. Yeah.
When you're young, in my 20s, I could just sit till 4 a.m., wake up 8 a.m. It was like, oh, that was enough sleep. I can still keep going. Once you hit 30s, it's from in the matter of a night, you're like, what the fuck just happened? I cannot you slept 4 hours, you become the most horrible person, your family hates you, you're groggy and you hate everyone.
Your bones ache when you wake up. It's like, oh man, I should have gotten that 8 hours of sleep. Yeah,
sleep is important. Realize sleep is important the older you get. Do you have that by yourself? When I sleep only 4 hours, 5 hours, dude, I'm the worst. My family hates me. I'm super annoying.
Cranky,
I'm aggressive, crank, fucking leave me alone.
I still sleep pretty late nowadays. I don't know why. I think the whole pandemic thing has sort of messed with my, I would take 3 hour long naps in the afternoon sometimes when I'm not working, and then sleep at 3 doing art or whatever, just watching Netflix. But I think my body's so used to sleeping late, but it makes up for it at some point in the day where I'm like, okay, well, 2 hours I'll nap here and there. But
yeah, really, as long as you're getting
kind of get in that 8 hours of sleep. I want to get into that,
Oh yeah. Habit. I mean, do you have kids?
No, I don't.
Yeah, that's a saving grace.
Yeah.
I hate waking up in the morning. If I could, if it was up to me, I would probably wake 10, 11, maybe 12, and usually work really late, but not anymore. I had to sort of put the lid on that shit, maybe sitting till 5 a.m. is not such a great idea if you know... This little person is just gonna fucking pull your leg 7 a.m.
Daddy,
wake up! Yeah, and you're like literally 2 hours in your sleep, like, fuck.
See, that's the thing, man. Respect to the parents who also do, like, Grassetti, man. I know he's got kids and he's doing all these amazing, like, where do you find the time to do all the art? And it's not just one character, it's like many, many characters. And yeah, he's doing 3D prints and he's doing, I'm like, man, and you got kids. I feel lazy looking at him, you know.
I don't know. I did talk with Raph about it, but I don't exactly remember like what he said about his schedules back then. That was actually this year. My memory is so shoddy. But I would imagine having like a proper plan a day and like being really strict about it. You know what's funny, like when you watch, when you, if you have an iPhone, you can actually check like how much time you've wasted, you know.
Yeah, it just reminds you, like,
it's,
oh,
a good
man,
reminder, like, I know people that just, they hate wasting time and then they become like incredibly productive because of it, but they're also like my friend Ash, he is like, the way he goes through the motions is when he sets up a goal, he's going to be so aggressive about it to make it happen that it's like, if he cannot achieve it because his time is being wasted by something, he's like really aggressive, you know, almost. And I know a bunch of people like that where, you know, you set up a goal and then you just go, like, there's no like, oh, maybe I'll watch, you know, Netflix or something or check Facebook or whatever, you know, like, there's no time for that. Like, that time is set up for other day or other time, you know. If it's a go time, it's a go time, and you just go.
Especially if you have kids, I would imagine, you know, you want that time with your kids. So whatever Facebook time you have, poing, you know,
yeah,
put that on the kids.
Yeah. Social media, man. Like, I'm so glad. It was such a big relief for me to get rid of it for the most part. Like, I mean, still using Instagram, but yeah, it's, I don't know. Like, there is a value to it, right? Like,
because what do you think is the value, like, in terms of like, for us artists, like, what is the ultimate value of social media?
Well, having a big following helps. Like, it's a big thing. Like, you should not ignore that. I know people who have like giant followings get offers left and right, and it's all not because, like, okay, if you have a big following, you're doing something right, right? Like, you have to. It's not. It's not an accident. You can see a lot of accounts that post a lot, but they never amount to anything. But we all know those artists, like, especially in film, when you look at someone's works, like, holy fuck, I've never even seen your website or anything, and this is the most amazing thing I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And you see artists like that, but you never see them online because they don't have online presence, right?
Yeah.
And the thing about those guys is that some of them are better than anyone you know, right? But they're not getting as many offers as someone who has like 200,000 followers on social media.
Yeah.
And the reason is simple, because producers and directors and production designers, you know, like, they research stuff and then they stumble upon a reference that they really like, and like, holy shit, there is a name and we're linked like in that reference. Let's reach out to that person and see if they're interested, you know. That happens a lot. And so, like, the more your work is being shared and you know, distributed across the internet, the easier it is to find you and who you are and, you know, and what you do. And then more people reach out and you have more opportunities. The more opportunities you have, the more picky you can be about who you're going to work with. The more picky you are, the more you can choose how much you're going to make, you know. So it compounds over time. So I think the value is there. But everything else, honestly, it's either a distraction or actually a big detriment to your mental health, in my opinion, you know.
Yeah, I would agree with that one, like, in terms of like getting sucked into, you know, a lot of the noise that social media brings. I mean, I know followers equate to, you know, possible customers if you ever do a workshop or a class, you know. That's, and, you know, I really do value that on that respect. But yeah, just the whole social media aspect of, you know, the mental thing of like, oh man, how come, what should I do next to gain? I'm like, ah, stop thinking like that. Just do whatever you want to do. And so I try to kind of find that balance of like, should I do fan art? Because I want to get more likes. But I'm like, I really want to do this anatomy thing. So it's always like opposing battle of like, because I think the stuff that I do isn't really as popular. Like I like more of the kind of sketchy forms and all that stuff. But I'm trying to kind of do a little bit more.
Just try sculpting anime girls, dude. You're going to make a lot of following.
I know, like do a Patreon. Like I'll sculpt whoever, girl or guy you want.
I'm obviously joking. There's some people that do it really well. So, props for that. But you've mentioned this. This is a pretty good point too. Like there are artists that basically, because of social media, they don't have to work for anyone, you know? Mm-hmm. They can just sell their products or make their, Patreon or tutorials or, you know, merchandise, whatever, and live like that and not be on behest of like big corporations or smaller studios or directors or whatever. They don't care. Like you can do whatever you want. It's still work. Like you still have to put in the work, but
probably a lot more work, but it's work that's fulfilling for them.
Yeah. I would imagine. I mean, there's obviously a threshold at which whatever you do is becoming more and more and more valuable because the amount of people have eyes on that stuff, you know? Like if you have 1 million followers, it's a giant difference than having 100,000 followers, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Because like just 10 times more people are going to be excited to buy the stuff you have, you know?
Yeah.
And if you're good at marketing that stuff too, because there are artists that have a giant amount of followers and they're not necessarily, monetizing it. And there are ones that don't have that many followers, but they are monetizing it really well. So
yeah, that's true.
There's a marketing and business of, all that stuff. You have to be really business oriented towards that stuff to make it work. I feel like,
Yeah. You gotta be savvy. Like I think most artists, I mean, I know myself, I'm not as savvy when it comes to that, I tend to kind of be more of like, oh, what do I feel like instead of like, what is actually going to drive you to better business type stuff, I guess.
Right.
So, yeah.
Yeah. For me, mental health aspect was big. Like I've noticed a lot of negative behaviors that I was getting. Like one of the best thing about what happened this year is like, I realized how toxic Twitter is in general. Even though I have like literally only followed like 5 people, I would still see so much negative shit.
Yeah.
Like just randomly retweeted or just suggestions from, Twitter or whatever. It's like, why am I even having that in my feed? Like I'm not even interested in any of that. Yeah. And yet I'm being like bamboozled into like politics for whatever reason. It's just so toxic,
Your
so
feed
much
will
misinformation.
Always be defined by your friends' choices in Twitter, right? Like, oh, so and so liked this tweet by whoever, politician or something,
So yeah, and now I remembered I was working on that project when James Gunn was canceled, and then like this person got canceled, and like. And then I saw this sort of like frenzy about canceling. I understand a lot of those situations, for example, right? But to me, it had like a connotation of what I've been personally experiencing as a child in communism. That was kind of like, yeah, I'm done. I'm out of here. I want to just focus on art. This is my jam. I have a circle of friends that. I don't need that appreciation to appreciate what I do, anymore. Mm-hmm. At least it's always like a good boost to have like, oh, people like my work. That's perfect. But I do 100% agree with what you said. It's like, oh, maybe I should do something for likes, those thoughts get in your head like all the time.
For me at least, it's like, I just want to be honest about it. I'm not like, oh, I'm too good for that. No, I mean, I think about
a
that
lot of people
for sure.
That,
like, because... Ego, right? Like you kind of, I mean, at least for me, like there's also always a part of me that's like, well, I kind of want to be appreciated in terms of like get more likes. And so let's let's try and see if I do like a Joker or something. So, you know, I'm not, you know, like, I'm not bulletproof to that, I guess. So,
yeah. I almost feel like you have to also have certain type of personality to like enjoy that stuff, you know, to enjoy sort of like catering to your fan base, like building the fan base and catering to it. It's like, as we are obsessed about art and like you're obsessed about like, I want to do the best sculpture about the subject that it really interests me.
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure there are artists that also have the same mindset when it comes to like social media, where it, for them, it's like, I want to build this thing, you know, and have this and build it as an amazing experience for whoever is following me.
The audience. Yeah.
Yeah. The audience. I had this guy, Ilya Kupshinov. I think he has like 2 million followers on Instagram already or something crazy like that. And it was very interesting because when I spoke to him, I had him on podcast twice. And each time we talked about social media, he was always very neurotic about making sure that everyone who is subscribed is getting what they subscribe for, you know, and enjoying the feed. So he would put like this artificial stress on himself to always be on top of the game and do the best thing he can do, right? Very, very interesting guy. But it's like kind of,
it's cool.
It kind of like reminds me of, you know, this very subject, like, you know, it's like obsession about doing the right thing. What's in your head? Like your head telling you this is the right thing to do, you know?
Yeah. It's interesting to kind of see the different flavors of like me. I'm not so much like that. I'm kind of like more like, I'm maybe a little bit of like, I want to please my followers. They love me from what I see, like forms, right? So I'll do something form based, but I am very interested in how, you know, those types think of like everything I do is really, I got to make it an experiential stuff for my fan base. And if you have that much following and you have the ability to influence how they feel, like that's a pretty powerful thing as an artist, right?
And
how he's able to create an experience for his followers. That's almost like pop star level of like, you know, say like a big, you know, pop star, like, oh, I have all this fan base. I want to make this to be an experience for them, like building that entertainment level. So that's cool. Like that's, you know, if you have freaking 2 million followers, that's like, you have the ability to play with your followers and make them feel something, which is cool.
I think you mentioned Beeple before. He is kind of like that, right? He does this thing.
Yeah, he's very, like, he's fast too. He's very fast.
I mean, he's been doing this for like, what, 15 years?
Like, holy cow, the debates just happened like 3 hours later. You have this like scene with, you know, the politicians and it's so current. So I don't know if it's just him working or he's got like a bunch of people working with him.
He does it the South Park way, you know?
Yeah.
What was it, 7 Days to Air? Was that the documentary?
I forgot the...
I think it was 7 Days to Air, because like they would just basically have those, that each season would be like basically like what, like 12 whatever weeks of just like grind.
Just
like making an episode a week. So like felt really current.
They're smart in their choice of like having the style kind of.
Very smart style to do that for sure.
Yeah, it's like you could be almost like a news, you know, like you're telling the events through your show as it happens.
But it's just done so perfectly.
I know. Well, yeah, you need like good imagination and writing to back all that stuff up. If not, then it's like, well, what am I watching this for? You know?
Yeah, so. Exactly. Yeah, I don't know. Social media has been. I think the second big part was also, I'm curious to hear what you think about it, but like once you follow a lot of people, like what happens in your brain is that you see all this amazing work that's being posted daily and then you feel lazy, like, fuck, I haven't done anything, you know? But it's sort of like it's a trick, because it's a accumulation of like 20 or 50 or whatever the amount you follow, best people that in your mind are the best in the world. So you're like, mm-hmm. those are people you look up to. Mm-hmm. And collectively they feel like, it feels like it's a one person that posts fucking awesome shit all the time, you know?
Even though that one person's like been working on that one piece for like, you know, months.
Yeah, months. Yeah.
It's like, yeah, psychologically you're kind of like, oh man, like they're all so productive. And then, yeah, you're right. Like when you really look at it, it's like, oh, okay. Well, they're all like, you know, I've been working on this for quite some time. It's just the accumulation of like a staggered, you know, thing on your feet makes you feel like, oh man, all this amazing art. What am I doing to my life?
Yeah. Do you ever find yourself like just milling on this too much? Like just catching yourself like, why am I obsessing about someone being more productive than me? Or
actually, I used to a while ago, but I never honestly got into it because I think I myself have been fairly productive too. Like I've been kind of tinkering on my own, learning VR. You know, I may not be posting as much, but I feel like I make use of my art time very well. So when I see, you know, like an amazing thing on my feed, I'm like, man, that's pretty cool. Oh shit, they're doing something really cool with that. Like, man, I want to try something like that. So I kind of like take it and try and do something with it. More of a sort of jumping off point to be kind of to fuel me into being inspired. Like, and a lot of those people who I follow that like just kick my ass into like taking action into doing art are like,
yeah.
Man, when I see, and they post rarely too, though. Like these guys are like, they stay silent. And then most of my feed is like a lot of like memes or whatever. Cause I tend to kind of follow a lot of people. Like if say a student follows me, and I follow them back if they interact with me. Cause I like that interaction. So my follower, the people I follow are actually a lot of people. The outcome of that is my feed is like a lot of different types of art, right? But then once in a while I would see like a post from Sam Poirier or whatever. That's like, holy crap, you know, he doesn't post so a lot, but when I see it, it's just like, oh, I gotta do art now.
Right.
Yeah.
Interesting. So. Yeah. I went through like different motions myself where I'll be following a lot of people. And then anytime someone would post anything about politics or photos of their family and food, I would instantly unfollow because I don't care. Like, you know,
you're here for art.
I'm here for art. Yeah. And eventually I would just narrow it down to like really like my, you know, like my Mount Rushmore of what I'm looking up to. But then I would go through like phases, like when I was really into photography and like really obsessed about it for a while, I would follow a lot of photographers and cinematographers. Mm-hmm. Now I'm into like mountain biking, so I do follow that a lot, you know?
Yeah.
So it's interesting. Let me fix my camera real quick.
So your followers evolve into your current interest. Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's just like, it gives you like different perspective, I feel like, on different subject matters that it's almost like what you said about leaving ILM and going into like Valve, and then leaving Valve is like you're putting like a little bit of a fire under your ass and like just wandering into unknown in a way. And what it does, you realize, oh, like this is a new thing that has the same amount of levels of complexity to what I was doing already before. And then it gets you excited about exploration.
It keeps you looking, moving, right? Instead of being stagnant in one area. And you know, it helps that you have a lot of interest too. Like I think, like for me, I love cinematography. I love photography. I love science fiction, but it's not just the only thing I love. I love other things like, you know, non-sci-fi, drama, whatever. So I find that having that curiosity like all feeds into that decision making, because if all I love is science fiction, then I'm like, well, I'm just going to stick to ILM because they they're the best of the best with sci-fi. But if I'm like, oh, I'm interested in other things, other aspects that may not be considered like sexy in the industry, then that helps me kind of move forward with like, oh, what's this industry? What's that tech? Like, what, as an artist, I think it's rare to even think about like working in tech, right? Like, well, Facebook, you know, like before VR, or when Oculus was starting around, like, well, what's Oculus? What's this? You wouldn't really associate that with, the sexy stuff, like the Marvel, the Naughty Dogs, the, you know, like the top shelf projects. But because I had interest, I was like, I don't care if it's not, you know, the Hulk or whatever. I'm curious where this could lead me. So.
Yeah. Yeah. So what was that led you to Facebook then, like to Oculus? Was that the new technology? You were like super interested where it's going to go?
Yeah, I mean, I've always been into VR, just in terms of literature, right? Like in sci-fi, like I've always read and watched, like, you know, it's a staple of sci-fi films, from Star Trek holodeck to Matrix to, Ghost in the Shell, you know, has like elements of that too. And so when Oculus was in Kickstarter, back in the Kickstarter days, I was already kind of keeping an eye out on them, because it's like, wow, this is really cool. If they really pulled this off, it could be cool for the industry. And then Zuckerberg bought Facebook. I mean, not Facebook, Oculus. he owns Facebook. Yeah, so he bought Oculus, and I was like, holy crap. And then I immediately thought, like, with this funding for this technology, what the hell? This could be huge. And I was lucky enough to be friends with, I don't know if you know Kenneth Scott.
I think I met him too. I think he was, I think his wife was working at Naughty Dog when I was there.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Corinne, yeah.
Yep.
So
I met him. I think he came to one of the like Naughty Dog's parties, and like, oh, shit, you know. Because I recognize his work. I remember seeing his work. And he came. Yeah, I've met him in person. I was always like, I kind of first rung the bell, and then like, yeah, obviously.
Mm-hmm. So Kenneth and I knew each other from the back in the days in the Mudbox forums, and we've I've always admired his work, and he says he admires mine. So I'm like going to take his word for it. But yeah, he was. He suggested me for the Oculus gig, because they hired him as the art director, essentially. So
Gotcha. Yeah, that's how it all starts.
Yeah, you know someone, you just be cool with people, it leads you places, man. It's like,
Yep. It was very similar for me with Magic Leap, actually. Mm-hmm. It's kind of a bummer where the Magic Leap is right now.
Yeah, I had high hopes for that, man. Like,
it was amazing. I mean, look, like I worked over 2 years with them. It was like one of the longest projects I've ever been on, and we've done some really cool shit. But I mean, obviously, I cannot talk about it, and very unlikely I'll be able to share any of it as well. But I think the best benefit I got out of it was the connections that I made. You know, because I was working with John Gaeta over there, and I met John in film industry. So it was really interesting, because we kind of crossed over to a completely different industry and worked together, you know, and kind of like that actually became like even better relationship between me and him in terms of like professional, but also like a little bit of friendship too. So, so that was great. I wonder what you think about just AR. And I mean, obviously, like with AR, it's kind of interesting, because like Magic Leap was kind of spearheading the AR project, but now do you think there's any company out there that does it, and like how does it compare to VR? Because like in my estimate, and maybe that's because I'm like a little bit of technologically illiterate on how expensive and how difficult things are, like how much it takes to make the things happen. But in my estimate, I was when I discovered AR, I was always like, this is the way the future is going to be, you know, not VR, but AR. But I mean, it seems like I'm wrong right now. Who knows? I mean,
it's the most, I mean, as a technology, right? Like, I think it's the most reality inclusive or social inclusive, because you can still see other people. Like, with VR, as amazing as it is, you're like, you're detached from the real world. So I've always considered AR to be like, if that ever takes off, I think that's going to be bigger and more valuable than VR, because VR is almost like, you know, you're at home, you're in a stereo system. You're kind of like, you're in that space of, you know, before, like, you know, when stereo systems were the thing, you're in that space for that specific reason to listen to music. You're at home specifically to do VR. With AR, you can take that anywhere with you. Go to the grocery, map, you know, Google Maps in AR. So there's a lot more, I mean, art in AR. Like, imagine like collaborating on a design with other artists in AR. I mean, there's a lot more practical reasons to do that. And I'm really excited what Apple's going to do. You know, I keep reading things that they, if maybe.
All right. AR, yeah. They're working on AR. Yeah. So that could be interesting.
I think if it ever come, they're going to make it, like, you know, whenever they release something, that's when people kind of go, oh yeah, let's jump onto that because Apple did it.
Right. So, yeah. That's true. I mean, VR, Oculus kind of touched upon AR in few elements. Like, the newer headsets have cameras, so you don't have to have those, you know, little towers everywhere that track you. It's kind of like a visual tracker, and you can tell that when you're putting on the headset and you're trying to basically make your workspace. It has this black and white image of you know, and
like the pass through, you can see, and
and even like what is this, The Void, whatever, those little studios across, I think the one is in LA, one is in San Francisco. There's a couple of towns that have them where you basically have like a backpack and like a fake weapon and you know, and the goggles, and you run around this sort of around, like this warehouse with padded walls so you don't kill yourself doing that.
Or accidental manholes that you kind of like, you know.
But then everything else is like projected into a game. Yeah, so there's that's like the, I guess, the AR quote-unquote application to it, you know?
Yeah.
Because it's like augmenting the reality and you're sort of like exploring, but on like a very rudimental level.
Everything about it right now with VR and you know, AR, I haven't really seen outside of Magic Leap and Microsoft. Everything about those technologies are such baby steps right now. I mean, VR is like, Oculus Quest 2 was just released yesterday, and that's supposedly like an amazing gadget, you know, for VR. So, I mean, it's taken like, I was at Oculus like maybe 6 years ago. So it's taken this long to really get to this point where it's now just gaining steam, you know, it's, and it's not, it's like the iPhone, they're saying, right. That didn't really make it overnight, was it iPod? It started as an iPod and then iPhone.
Yeah.
And then now it's like the phenomenon that it is. So it's probably going to take some more years for VR or AR to be like the iPhone level of everyone. Like, my grandmother is going to be like, you know, she has one in her pocket or something.
Yeah.
You know, it's going to be big when it's at that point.
It needs to be like, the footprint of a technology has to be like literally a glasses or sunglasses where it becomes a fashion rather than a technology, you know?
Technology, yeah. Because it's like, right now, VR disrupts like hairstyle, right? Like, you put it on, there's that strap, and it's like, people don't want that. Like,
exactly.
You know, it's like, hair. When I don't want it messing up my hair. I want it to be glasses or whatever.
Yeah, and when you have glasses, you have to take them off. Like, it's a fucking chore.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, it is.
Yeah. Although I remember when I think I had HTC Vive, that was my first headset. Mm-hmm. It was so much more heavy than the Rift 2. Mm-hmm. And I did have the first Rift as well, where you had all the cables and the antennas and
two things pointing your way.
It was just such a hassle to, you know. And then the new Rift came out. I got that. I was like, oh yeah, that's way, way easier. It's like significantly easier to use. And then you have Quest. I've never looked into Quest. It feels like it's like a great solution, right? But there's limitations to it as well, I believe.
From my understanding, like you can, and I haven't used it, so, but going by what people are saying, you can still play with the desktop apps through this Link cable. Mm-hmm. So I can still use Medium with Quest if I buy this Link cable or connect through it through virtual desktop, I believe, which is like cordless. So there's means to actually transmit desktop information into the headset as sort of like I don't know how they do it. It's magic for me because that's running off of like a mobile phone power, right? Because it has to be for something that compact.
Probably Bluetooth.
Bluetooth. So there's a lot of radiation going in your head. I don't know. I'd rather
growing inside tumors.
I'd rather go with a classic, this thing where it's like made to be hooked up to the desktop, right? Without any, I'm sure there's like whatever signals there, but it's minimal.
What do you think the current progress on tools? Because you worked, when you were at Oculus, you worked on Medium mostly, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
No, actually, I was kind of part-time. I wasn't officially a part of the Medium team. I was running a team in sort of like the research and development group.
Got it.
But then I was working with a Medium team when they were still at Oculus, just involving myself, even though I wasn't a part of that team because I'm a character artist and my passion is like sculpting. I developed a relationship with them that when they went to Adobe, I was like, when they had an opening, I jumped ship. So I'm now at Adobe with them. So,
yeah. What do you think Medium is going? Because like last I used it, I was like a year ago. I mean, there's two takeaways that I had, the positive and negative. Like the positive takeaway was, oh my God, in terms of spatial sculpting, there's just no way. Like this is just far better than the regular sculpting, right? Once you understand the tools, and the tools felt very easy. It's like with anything. Like obviously, when you do it first time, it's like it's only having a round brush, you know. But you have to build up. Once you build up your tools, it's perfect. Mm-hmm. My biggest, not gripe, but sort of like the missing feature was the pressure sensitivity. So like you could do a good volumes, but it was very difficult to control. Like if you ZBrush, you have the pen pressure and you can control the volume versus, I don't think that was a feature yet in Medium. I don't know where it is now, but I wonder how do you think those tools are going to develop? I have to be careful here because you work with Medium and we don't have to be like
so with that, NDA I'll say that concerned. I can't be specific about like what will be in the future, but
With Medium specifically, right? I'm talking about generally in tools because like Gravity Sketch, for instance, I remember using it first time and it was just like, what is this crap, you know? And then now you have, it's almost like this dirty sort of, not dirty in the bad way, but like it's almost like a CAD tool in a way, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And you can actually spit
accuracy,
out.
Right?
Yeah, and you can actually spit out CAD formats and then clean them up in like Moi or Fusion 360, you know, that kind of stuff. So that's like a giant step forward. So I'm just curious, like, where you think this is all going?
I think with Medium, like, the tools have actually gotten much better, like, with the addition of, like, the Move tool. Whereas before, early days, just you didn't have the ability to manipulate the surface to that level where you're moving things, you're being accurate. Yeah, right now there's really nothing to kind of compensate for, you know, the fact that like, say you have pressure sensitivity, right? And cause you're like, you're working against air.
Yeah.
But as I can imagine with both VR technology and Medium, wherever they're going to be in many, many years, that's going to be definitely taken care of. But right now it's gotten to a point where it's really good that it plugs into like a lot of the pipeline stuff, like say, oh, like my process is I want to take it to ZBrush for further refinement, right? So I'm going to spit out an OBJ, bring it into ZBrush, you know, work on mm-hmm. it back to Medium, keep working on it to Substance. So it's just a great thing that plugs into that pipeline, non-linear pipeline, right?
Right.
You're kind of just just becomes another valuable tool. And the value is, as you mentioned, like the spatial aspect of like seeing your models and your sculptures as if it's there. That alone for me is really why I'm devoting so much time, because that's why I believe in the tool, is because of that aspect,
right,
among many things. But that is like something so new in the industry that if there is a value to VR, it would be that, like for this type of work, not really for games for me, because I'm not really into games, but
yeah,
to collaborate in a classroom, to teach kids, to do art in a dimensional manner, that's like such an unbeatable thing. So
yeah, I don't imagine playing video games like roller coasters and stuff. No yeah. way. In VR, you're gonna puke right away.
I mean, I puke in real life. Roller coasters.
So. Yeah. It messes up with you. Like when you play a video, like a roller coaster video, you're just like, what the fuck? You know?
Oh yeah, man.
Because
yeah.
of the motion and, you know, all that stuff. But yeah, it's fascinating. I'm curious where it's all gonna go, because, you know, I was thinking that AR going to eventually mm-hmm. take off, but it seems like right now it's kind of in a stale. Although mm-hmm. we don't know what's going on with, I mean, maybe Apple is doing something crazy. Who the heck knows? You know.
I think VR is gonna take off, like if not already. Like the Quest is proving to be a good value for people, with students and like the industry, especially with COVID, in terms of like getting together in concerts, or, you know, like I took part in a talk, you know, they would typically have this particular event, you know, like, you know, in person, but then they had to do it all in VR. And I was in that talk and it was like, holy cow, like, it works so well. Like I was an avatar and all that stuff, but it's like,
right,
you know, so for that kind of stuff, it will sort of become that necessary thing that we have to kind of go through with COVID and the world being the way it is right now, where we can't go anywhere. It becomes more of an important aspect in our life, I think. And I think that's why it's going to take off now.
Yeah. Yeah. And people don't want to go outside anyways.
Yeah, I mean, most people aren't really social.
Yeah, they aren't. It's kind of like, I guess another positive, completely off topic here, is, you know, so many artists now realizing like, oh crap, I can work from home and it's actually good.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
And to complement that, I think businesses are going to start realizing that, oh, work is still being done. Why am I paying all this rent for a building,
yep,
for maintenance, all this overhead, when, you know, and a part of me is saddened, because, you know, like I like the social aspect of going to work and all that stuff. But I think, yeah, it's interesting. It'll be interesting. 2021, past COVID, I hope, you know, what
2021 is going to be amazing, dude.
Yeah, man, it's going to be Shangri-La. It's going to be the age of enlightenment, right?
I mean, 2020. I mean, what else can go wrong, man?
I know. I mean,
everything already went wrong. So it's like you were thinking like, oh, it's calming down. Nope, fuck you. Fires everywhere.
Cthulhu would rise up from the, you know, the ocean, you know, in 2021. I'd be like, oh, okay, yeah.
I think the last one is aliens, like aliens coming to Earth. Like, that's, you guys fucked up.
And we'll just accept it, because we've just been through the plague, you know, like the plague with COVID. And like,
they'll be like, let's fix this. You guys fucked up. We're taking the reins.
Yeah, here's your
enough child
take
play.
Take the day off, guys. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, so funny, dude. So funny.
Yeah.
So what is your what's on the horizon for you, man? Like, so you obviously like 2020 is this the year of finding time to think about the future and finding time mm-hmm. to see what excites you. Obviously, you know, recently you switched to Adobe, so congratulations on that, obviously.
Thank you.
I'm curious, like, do you have like any plans, grandiose plans, like from now on I'll be fucking doing this and that?
my position at Adobe is actually very exciting for me personally, because excuse me, I'm drinking some water here.
Yeah, no worries, I'm actually gonna sip too. Get that water in your throat, man.
Yeah, get that thing. Because, you know, like, I'm working with a medium team, and I'm also trying to show, like, the industry the value of medium and the workflow and stuff like that. So that means developing a lot of relationships with artists, being more personally involved with the art community, you know, trying to be more of a positive impact in the art community. Like, that's one of the things that sort of came out of my you know, months of thinking is like, what am I contributing to future artists, like, you know, students. And I've been around for 20 years. I want to pay it forward and you know, kind of all this knowledge that I have, like, if someone's just starting out, like, I want to be able to help them if they seek the help, and just be sort of like a force in the industry that, like, takes no bullshit when it comes to, like, toxic shit, you know, like,
yeah, fuck toxic shit, dude.
Fuck toxic shit. Like, I've seen enough of that shit. And yeah, like, I've always detested that kind of, pettiness, you know, in the industry, and be sort of proactive along with others to keep this healthy as an industry for professionals and artists. Like, I think it's our job as people who have been around and have had the success that we have to ensure that this community is a place where people can learn and grow into, versus, like, you know, I mean, I've taken part in, like, drama and all this, like, I just don't want that anymore. Yeah. You know, like, yeah, so
just remove it from your life, man. Just, yeah, again, man. Just get away. I don't need
social
you
social media. Yeah,
I don't need you. I don't need any of that. Yeah, I take that, people like that, away from me. Like, I basically cut cord to any toxicity. Is just, like, not worth your time, not worth your energy. It just drains you. It was kind of funny. I was listening to this episode on JRE. There was this, I wish I remember. It was one of the recent episodes. It was like a psychologist, researcher of narcissism. And he was talking about, you know, those mini jabs, those little things that you have your quote unquote friends telling to you. But that really what they do is, like, they drain you down. They all just, like, say something shitty, but like, it's only a joke. Why are you so sensitive, you know?
Yeah.
And then,
but it's like energy that's still kind of like, it's like a wet blanket, man. It just kind of drags
exactly.
you down.
Yeah. Exactly. I mean, we all kind of find it in ourselves a little bit. You know, when I was listening to that episode, I was like, oh, that's kind of me. Like, not necessarily this, but like other things, like, oh, that's kind of me a little bit, you know? And then you realize, like, oh shit, you know, maybe I should work a little bit on myself, you know?
Oh yeah, man. I mean, but that's a part of the thinking too. It's like, oh yeah, I've taken part in a lot of, you know, I'm not, to say that I haven't, like, would be a lie. Or if anyone says they're like, oh, I'm pure of that, like, I'm not going to freaking believe you. Everyone's like capable of pettiness or whatever, you know? So,
yeah, but I do agree with you. Like, just cut the fucking toxicity, man. Like, get those people out of your life. It's just not worth your time. The older you get, the more you realize. Yeah.
Yeah, I think with age, that becomes a lot clearer. Like, when I was younger, you know, I'm like, oh, I, you know, would bitch a lot about things and, like, you know, marinate in certain things with people.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just about getting older, and again, ability to think about the things and put things in perspective is very important. Like, you could be 50 years old. If you don't do that, you'll always be the same as as when you were in your 20s, like, you know, so
yeah. And you quickly realize the person you might be bitching to is like, hey, that might be my future boss, you know, and maybe they don't like hearing any of that, you know.
Exactly. Yeah. No. I mean, it all kind of life has a weird way of like, circling back at you, right? So,
yeah.
My motto is just be cool with people, you know.
It's personality matters. Building your personality. That's a cool one.
Yeah, it should be a course in school. Yeah.
you know what teaches what taught me about listening was doing a podcast. Like, fuck, dude. Like, just the ability to not interrupt all the time. That's such a difficult thing, you know. So and listening to someone and following the motions and understanding what the hell they are saying or trying to say.
Oh, I bet. Yeah.
The act of conversation. Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember those comments like it was yesterday. I was like, you're interrupting all the time. Like, let your guests speak. Like, why are you inviting people if you're only talking? You know, I was like, fuck, all right, you guys are right, you know?
Oh, really? Because I was going to say, like, I love the flow because, like, yeah, I've been in like certain live streams where it's like, well, oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. You're talking, you're going to interrupt me. This is like a good, you give good space to the conversation.
So. Oh, I'm trying hard. Trust me.
I mean, I know how it is. Sometimes you're like excited to add on to a conversation, right? Like you're like,
yeah, but me.
me, my experience.
Yeah.
I have something to say about that. Yeah. Me. Yeah.
That's the reminder I put on myself is, whenever someone's talking and I'm like, I have this thought, like I need to share, it's like, do I? Like, maybe I should listen, you know?
Yeah.
You know, so it's a muscle. It takes time, you know?
Yeah.
It takes time to build.
It is interesting that, you know, podcast is that's where you get to exercise a lot of that. Put it in practice.
Yeah. But you're right. Like it's way different if you have a conversation and you have a conversation that flows versus when someone just constantly like, but listen to what I have to say, you know,
it's tiring, man. You can leave that conversation going, oh man,
that guy was an asshole. What the fuck?
I just want to sleep from that conversation.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. All right, man. We could talk like way more. Obviously, there's like so many topics that we omitted and didn't talk about, but we can always do it one more time.
Yeah, man.
I know you're
great,
busy. Yeah, I know busy. I'm busy a little bit too. Actually, my family's back, so I'm gonna put some time into into the little one, you know.
Yeah.
So they don't like, where the fuck is dad? You know.
Go, please. Yeah.
But it was fun, man.
This is
I really appreciate you coming on.
It's awesome.
Yeah, I try to keep it that way. It's like, I never prepare for those things. Although, like, I try to make sure that I know who I'm talking to at least. You know?
So, Raph Grassetti. Now I'm Gio.
So, Robert, like, your name's Robert, right? Do you work in fucking X, Y, and Z? You know, like,
the screen just goes.
Yeah. It just shatters. all right, man. Where can people find your work? If they look for Geo,
Instagram is where I post, and then ArtStation mainly. Facebook, I tend to kind of post there too, but mostly Instagram is
Don't look for geonakbel.com because that's some Chinese NBA website right now for whatever reason.
Oh, it is. It used to be. It got hacked for like a porn thing.
Oh,
so
damn!
Definitely don't go to my website.
Definitely don't go there. ArtStation. I will link your social media, everything below.
Yeah, and not the website.
Not the website. Yeah, dude. You have to reserve that shit. Otherwise it's like
I deleted
Twitter. I already see someone reserved that name.
It's oh like, my goodness.
We'll see what happens.
Yeah, we'll see. I'll unfollow him.
Yeah, don't follow that shit, obviously.
Yeah.
I'm only on Instagram. But don't follow me. Follow Gio. All right, guys. Good times.
Right,
thanks, Gio, for joining me on this one. And until the next time. Cheers.
All right. Cheers.